One of the reasons we know the church isn't going anywhere is because it's built on the unshakable foundation of the permanence and the righteousness of God.
Welcome to Light the Way, featuring the verse-by-verse Bible teaching of Dr. Colin Monger, Senior Pastor at Shepherd of the Hills Church. Jesus said, "You're the light of the world," and that's what we want to help you be. And one way you can shine your light is by supporting this program. Become a Light Partner, and with your monthly support, you'll be helping us reach the world with the gospel. In addition to reaching others, new Light Partners receive a free copy of Dr. Monger's book, Meet Jesus, looking at the seven signs and I Am statements in the Gospel of John. If you'd like more information about the ministry or to become a Light Partner, log on to www.lighttheway.radio.org. But right now, join us as we open our Bibles and begin.
If you brought your Bibles, would you open to Revelation chapter 6? You know, one of the most powerful forces on earth is water. It has the power to move land masses and cut through mountains. And I read the other day that water, as shallow as just 12 inches deep, has the power to move a vehicle. So keep that in mind next time you're driving down the road and the road at a low spot is kind of covered over with a little bit of extra rain. A foot of that water, just 12 inches of that, has the power to wash away a car. And actually, out of the 10 worst disasters in history, 7 have included water storms. Water is a powerful thing. If you've ever been to the beach and been knocked down by a wave, then you know just how powerful it can be. And speaking of waves, there is a phenomenon on the ocean called a rogue wave. Some people call it a tidal wave, but basically it's this random giant wave that has the power to sink ships at sea. It's a captain's worst nightmare. There's no warning, there's no preparation, there's no way to get ready. It just strikes. And the largest tidal wave or rogue wave ever recorded was actually back in February of 2000 when a British research vessel observed a wave off the coast of Scotland measuring 100 feet high. And as kind of a cousin to the rogue wave is something called a tsunami. Now, people often use those terms interchangeably, but they are very different things, although they have some similarities. For example, like a tidal wave, a tsunami has a lot of power, and it can cause a lot of problems. And on December 26th of 2004, the world got to see the power of a tsunami when one struck the Indonesian coast and killed 250,000 people in almost a single day. Very similar, but there's differences. For example, a tsunami doesn't come all at once. It comes in attacks. It comes in waves. It starts as a small ripple, and then it builds. In fact, it starts so small that if you were standing in the middle of the first wave of a tsunami, you might not even know anything was happening. But then the next wave is bigger, and the next wave is stronger, and it comes farther inland and farther inland, and it's just this constant bombardment of wave after wave after wave after wave. That's a tsunami. What does that have to do with the book of Revelation, you're wondering? Well, in chapter 6, a period of time called the tribulation begins. It's a 7-year period where God will unleash judgment on the earth unlike the world has ever seen. And just like a tsunami, it will come in waves. And it will get progressively worse and more intense with each judgment and each judgment, each one being worse than the one before. Moving from a period of peace on earth, of total harmony, to Jesus' final battle with Satan on the field at Armageddon. And all of that tribulation starts here in chapter 6. And notice it begins in verse 1 by saying, "Now I watched the Lamb open one of the 7 seals. And I heard one of the 4 living creatures say with a loud voice like thunder, 'Come.' And I looked, and behold, a white horse. And its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to him. And he came out conquering and to conquer." From this point, all the way through until chapter 19, it's full of bad news. I mean, there's just no getting around to it. It's kind of like most of the book of Job. It's all bad news. It's judgment, it's pain, it's suffering, there's death, there's famine, there's war. A lot of bad news. But for the church, there is some good news. And there's a couple things to keep in mind. First of all, you won't be there. If you have a saving relationship with Jesus Christ, you won't see any of this. You remember what Jesus said to the church at Philadelphia, the church of praise? He said in chapter 3, because you have kept my word, I will keep you from the hour that is coming upon the whole world. And so you won't be there. If you are a saved person, if you have that relationship with Christ, if you've given the Lord your life, you won't see any of this. And the second thing to keep in mind is none of this has actually started yet. This is still a future event. And we know that because Jesus warned us about believing the tribulation had come when it actually had not. He says in Matthew 24, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Kind of sounds like today. But see that you're not alarmed, he says. For this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of birth pains, he says. He goes on to write, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. So the end hasn't started yet. This hasn't begun. Now you may be going through something difficult, and the church may face persecution, and you may have personal tribulation in life. But as long as the church is on earth, the tribulation hasn't started, and that means there's still time. There's still time to share Jesus with somebody. You still have a mission to do. That conversation you may have been putting off, saying, well, it's not time yet. Well, there is still time, but we don't know how much. There's still time to be a witness. There's still time to make a change in your own life. There's still time to reserve your seat with what will become the greatest storm evacuation of all time. There is still time. You haven't lived so much life that it's too late. You know, I hear people say stuff like that sometimes. They'll say, you know, I've just done so much. I'm so far in life. I've lived so many years. I've committed so many crimes against God. It's got to be too late for me. The answer is no. It hasn't started yet. There is still time. And as we see, when it begins, it will start with a ripple, a very subtle event that will eventually turn into a tsunami of judgment. Notice back in verse 2 where it says, and I looked and behold a white horse, and its rider had a bow. Now you should know that almost every author you'll read, almost every theologian, almost every commentator, all agree this is the Antichrist. This is his arrival on earth. And it makes perfect sense because after the rapture of the church, Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet will be released into the world as a judgment for sin. And for 7 years, they'll be free to reign and do whatever they want. And so the first rider shows up to start that off. This is the Antichrist arrival on the scene. But notice how he shows up. He doesn't come with a little red tail and a pitchfork. He doesn't come as a threat. It says, I looked and behold a white horse. Now that's interesting because the tribulation period will be a very violent period. And yet, throughout history, white has always been a symbol of peace. You've heard of armies raising the white flag of surrender or somebody coming under the white flag of truce. Well, the Antichrist will come on a white horse of peace. And if it's one thing the world is ready for, I would say, it's more peace, wouldn't you think? I mean, if you just look around and turn on the news, there's a need for peace in the world. I looked it up this past week and I found there are currently, as of right now in 2018, currently on the earth right now, more than 65 different wars going on. 9 of those kill more than 10,000 people a year. And if you go back to the year 1900 and fast forward to present day, more than 120 million people have died in armed conflicts around the world. And so the idea of peace on earth is a very appealing thing. And when the Antichrist shows up, it will be with that promise. Peace on earth. And what's more is he has the power to do it. Notice how it says he comes on a white horse and has a bow. but no arrows. You see, this is a symbol of strength, not aggression. When the Antichrist arrives, it will not be in force. It will be in friendship. Notice it says, a white horse, and he had a bow. Somebody once said the Antichrist will have the oratorical skills of a John Kennedy, the inspirational power of a Winston Churchill, the respectability of Gandhi, the charm of Will Rogers, and the genius of King Solomon. And so just picture the scene. It's post-rapture. The world is in chaos because hundreds of millions of people worldwide have just disappeared. Planes have crashed. Cars have crashed. Public services have declined. Teachers and students and leaders, they've all disappeared in some capacity. The stock markets are down. Wars have broken out. Crime is on the rise. Drug use is on the rise. And in the middle of all of that chaos, in comes a rider on a white horse who says, I can fix it all. I can bring this world some peace. But there's a catch. And it doesn't tell us here, but there is a catch. It's a false peace. It's an illusion. It isn't real. And we can deduce that because later on, when the second seal is opened, it says in verse 4, out came another horse, bright red, and its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth. So this peace doesn't last. This peace is not something that's going to change the world for all time. This is a false peace. Why is that important to us? You know, as the church, we won't be here to see it, so why bother studying it? Well, simply because whether in the tribulation or right now, the truth is, and it has always been so, the enemy of your faith is very good at making you want what he has. This is exactly how Eve was tempted. If you remember all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, where Adam and Eve are in the garden and the serpent comes down to Eve, and the Bible says that it was more crafty and more cunning than the rest of the creation. And he comes to Eve and the serpent says, well, why don't you eat of that fruit? And Eve said, well, God said if we eat of it or touch it, we'll die. And the serpent said, no, that's not true. There's good stuff in there. And then it says in Genesis 3, so when the woman saw the tree was good for food, and it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. The enemy is very good at making us want what he has. And he knows what works on each individual person. And he uses that against you and makes it look appetizing. But at the end of the day, it's nothing more than a worm on a hook. It isn't real. And here's the point. Beware of anything in life that promises to take away all your hardship. Beware of anything that comes along with a promise of removing all pain, of making life easy, of solving all your problems. You'll never have another worry in the world if you just do this or go here or trust them. And I say beware of that because that's something we could all relate to. Who doesn't want an easier life? Who doesn't want more money in the bank? A better paying job or less pain and less illness. Who doesn't want total peace? And your enemy knows that. But remember, Jesus told us in John 16, in me, he says, you will have peace because in the world you will have tribulation. As long as we live in a fallen world, hardship is part of the deal. Jesus had hardship, did he not? Jesus, it tells us in the Gospel of John, came to his own and his own rejected him. It was Jesus who said that everything else has a place to sleep. The bird has a nest, but the Son of Man, he said, has nowhere to lay his head. It was Jesus that was rejected by the Jews. It was Jesus who was nailed to a cross. Jesus had hardship. Jesus said, if they hate you, remember, they hated me first. That's a normal part of life. It doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. Going through something difficult does not mean you have necessarily done anything wrong. Now, you may be suffering the consequences of choice, but hardship is a part of life. Which brings up something else I don't think is discussed often enough, and that is pain is not necessarily bad. It's uncomfortable, I'll give it to you. It's unpleasant, sure, I'll grant you that. But it's not inherently bad. You know, pain tells you something's wrong. Pain makes you aware. Pain forces us to evaluate our situation honestly. You know, in Romans chapter 12, Paul said, "Do not be conformed to this world." Well, pain keeps that very thing from happening. And the last thing your enemy wants is for you to wake up and start asking questions. He wants you comfortable and at peace and at ease and not questioning anything. And so he says, peace in the world. And he shows up with a white horse, but it's a false peace. The second thing to notice about the tribulation and the Antichrist is he comes with a false perception. Notice how it goes on to say, and its rider had a bow and a crown was given to him. A crown was given to him. You know, one of the things that's indicative of the Antichrist all throughout prophecy and all throughout the Bible is impersonating Jesus, counterfeiting miracles, doing things that look like Christ but aren't the real McCoy. For example, he comes on a white horse. You know, that's something Jesus will do in Revelation 19. It says, then I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and one sitting on it is called Faithful and True. The Antichrist also brings peace to the world, which is something Jesus will do for real after the tribulation period, when he rules for eternity and brings the new heaven and the new earth. Everything the Antichrist does and everything your enemy does is always a counterfeit miracle. 2 Thessalonians tells us about that. It says, the coming of the lawless one is by the activity of Satan with all power and false signs and wonders. And in each case, it's false. It's counterfeit. It wasn't a white horse from heaven. It wasn't a true peace. And the same thing is true here. This isn't a real crown. This isn't made of gold and silver with gems and jewels like you may think. It's not diamond studded. You know, I think of a crown, I think of the Queen of England and that thing she wears. That's not what this crown looks like. If you looked this Greek word up, what you would find is the word refers to a victor's crown. It's a trophy for a champion. It's something that would be made with vines and leaves. And it would kind of go around the forehead, much like what you see in the pictures of the Romans with the togas and those things around their head that look like branches. That's exactly what that is. It's a victor's crown. It's not royal. This is not something that you would give to a king. This is something you give to an athlete who just won a race. This is something that's given to a person who's just conquered a victory. And notice it says, a crown was given to him. The world gave him this crown. He didn't show up with it. And that tells us something else. When this happens, the world will be behind this guy. He will be celebrated by the global community. After all, he's done something nobody else could do. Despite all the promises of all the politicians, he actually increased the stock market and fixed the economy and stabilized the gas prices. And unemployment is likely down, and employment is up, and crime is down, and wars have ended, and life is good. And so the world says, this guy's a hero, and he gets a hero's welcome. And without firing a single shot, they follow him right into bondage. And it doesn't stop until every single person takes the mark. In Revelation 13, he says, also it causes all to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark. That is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. Somebody once put it this way, a comfortable prison is still a jail. And here's what that means for us here today, because we won't be here for this, but we are here right now. Be careful who you let influence your life. Be careful who you let guide you in life. You remember Jesus was writing the letter to the church at Ephesus, and he said in chapter 2, you have tested those who call them apostles and are not, and found them to be false. You know, in 1 John chapter 4, it says, beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test them to see whether they are from God. Not every book is right. Not every piece of literature, not every advice, not every talking head on TV is correct. And it doesn't matter how good it sounds. It's not always right. Be careful who you let speak into your life. And I say that because we see it happen all the time, over and over. It's just a repeating occurrence. People are disenfranchised with something, or they're having a hard time, or a bit of bad luck, and they're feeling down, or they're suffering an injustice. And they line up to follow behind anyone and anything that says they can fix it all. That, by the way, is exactly how Adolf Hitler convinced Germany to follow him into the Second World War. Following World War I, Germany had been sanctioned by the international community for its role. And because of that, not only was their nation bombed and destroyed, and not only were their farms destroyed, but now they had to go and pay restitution to all the countries they were at war with. The communities and the population of Germany were living in poverty, and they were hungry, and they were suffering. And out comes somebody who had a great tongue for speech. And he said, I can fix it all. I can make your life what it was if you just follow me. And they did. And so it goes with the Antichrist. The world at the time is filled with violence and uncertainty. The rapture has just happened. Wars are all over the place, more so than even now. And out of all of that comes a knight in shining armor riding on a white horse who says, I can fix it all. And he does. And so they give him a crown, a victor's crown was given to him. That brings up something else. Evil often masquerades as good. Evil often masquerades as good. If it didn't, nobody would be fooled, would they? The serpent masqueraded as a friend, did he not? Temptation was seen as something to provide what Eve lacked. Evil often masquerades as good. If it didn't, nobody would be duped. It's not like people would say, well, you know, that's the worst idea I've ever heard. I'm in. Let's do it. That's not how it goes. It's made to look like a good plan. And so in the world today, abortion is called freedom of choice. And the tearing down of marriage is called equality. And the rejection of the Bible in colleges and universities is called freedom of thought. And so evil has been masquerading as good. And it's fooled a lot of people. There was a movie that came out about 10 years ago. It was a prequel to one of the Star Wars movies, if you guys watched any of those. But there was a scene, and this was supposed to be before the Empire, before the Rebels, and all that stuff was going on. The galaxy was in turmoil. And one of the senators stands up and says, I can fix it all if you just elect me emperor. And in the scene, everyone does a unanimous vote, and they applaud. And one of the characters who wasn't so much for it, one of the good guys, stands up and says, so this is how freedom dies, with thunderous applause. I imagine the Antichrist will be celebrated with thunderous applause. I imagine at that time, Time Magazine would probably name him Person of the Year. I imagine he'll get a Nobel Peace Prize. And so it says here, a crown was given to him, all the respect and the accolade the world has to offer. And so we have a false peace, a false perception. Everybody's been fooled. And finally, as we close, it reveals a false purpose. And notice it says, and I looked, and behold, a white horse, and its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and here it is. He came out conquering and to conquer. When the Antichrist comes, he will come with a false purpose. He doesn't come to bring peace to the world. He's not coming to end crime. He isn't the world's hero. He isn't there to make your life better. It says here, he comes to conquer, and he came out conquering. It's a false purpose. There was a story of a man who was trying to buy a home, and he found one on the market. It was a rock bottom price. It was exactly what he wanted, his dream home. He couldn't believe it. It was so cheap. And so he put in a bid, and he got the house. There was one condition on the sale, however, and that was that the seller had the right to do whatever he wanted with a single nail on the back door. He said, I can put a nail up there and I can do whatever I want with that nail, but the rest of the house is yours. And the buyer said, well, you know, no big deal. It's just a nail. It's just a little bit of space. It's not going to take over my life or anything. And so it'll probably rust off in a year. Sure, you can have the nail. Then they closed. The very next day, when the buyer was moving in, the seller hung up a dead cat. Well, the buyer said, you can't do that. And he said, I can do whatever I want with that nail, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang up that dead cat. And the buyer said, fine, hang up your cat. It's not going to interrupt me. Except for a few days later, when it started to smell, and the neighbors started to complain, and the township started to complain, and animals started being attracted to the home. It got to the point where the buyer couldn't stand it, and he said, have your house back, and he left. The moral of the story is this. Don't give the enemy a nail in your life. Don't give him a single inch in your life. It doesn't matter how good it may look. It doesn't matter how many problems it may solve. It doesn't matter how great the deal is. Don't give an inch. 1 Peter chapter 5 says, your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. He's not there to help or bring peace to the world. He's there to take over completely. And so it says he came out conquering and to conquer. You want to know how we know this is the Antichrist and not Jesus Christ? Because Jesus didn't conquer anyone. Jesus never came and forced anyone to follow him. He called everyone. And he's calling you. And if you've not responded to that call, I want to encourage you to make a change. Because there is time. Precious little time, but there is time. If you are not sure where you will be when this tribulation happens, if you've never come to a point in your life where you've said, Lord, I give you everything. You've maybe grown up in the church and you've been here every single Sunday of your life, and yet you can't remember a period where you said, Lord, you can have it. You know, Jesus said, in that day, many will say to me, didn't I do all this stuff? And he'll say, but I never knew you. One of the most frightening verses in all the Bible is right there. If you are not sure whether Jesus knows you personally, I want to invite you to make a change. And it doesn't matter what you've been through, and it doesn't matter what you've done or how much life you've lived. It's not too late.